Howard blinks up at him, mouth ajar.
Yeah, I wanted to come and see the show.
He doesn't have a ticket,
the boy on the door says sullenly.
Oh, gee, that's a real shame, because... Jesus Christ, Howard, what the hell happened to your hand?
The erstwhile history teacher's hand is swathed in about a quarter mile of not very clean bandage. He starts babbling something about an accident incurred while cooking a Chinese stir-fry, addressing himself to Greg's midriff.
Have you taken it to a doctor?
The acting principal interrupts.
Well, no, not yet,
Howard says, still avoiding eye contact. He's up to something, Greg thinks. You spend your day with teenage boys. You learn to detect the signs of a plot pretty quickly.
Looks like it needs medical attention. If I were you, I'd take it to a doctor, pronto.
Yes, but...
Howard mumbles.
But I didn't want to miss the show.
Greg makes a gesture of frustration with his fist.
Well, darn it, Howard, that's a real shame, because the thing is, we're totally sold out.
Howard gapes at him helplessly. Waves of booze radiate from him.
You couldn't... I mean...
There's no way Greg would let him anywhere near this concert, even if he didn't look like he'd spent the last 3 days drunk in a ditch.
I'd love to, Howard.
He puts his arm around Howard's shoulder and steers him out of the way of the real guests, who are beginning to whisper and point.
I truly would, but we're already turning people away here.
It's just...
Greg can practically hear the motors in the man's clogged brain.
Just after, you know, working on the program, I feel a sort of a personal wish to...
I thoroughly understand that, Howard. I thoroughly understand that.
Brother Jonas has appeared at his elbow. Greg nods at him meaningfully.
Tell you what, why don't we get you some nice fresh air outside and we can talk about it there?
Okay.
Howard says dismally, then checks himself.
Or actually, I wonder if I could have a quick word with Tom.
With Tom?
Greg smiles solicitously.
Now what would you have to say to Tom?
Just wanted to wish him luck. For the future.
That's very kind of you, Howard, and I'll be happy to pass that message on. We're just about to start here, though, so I think it would be better if...
Okay, but... Maybe just a quick...
No, I don't think that would be a good...
I can see him right over... Tom!
Howard? You all right, Howard? Just take a second to get your breathing back. That's it. Nice fresh air.
Anything wrong there, Greg?
Calls Oliver Taggart, class of 82, from the steps of the hall.
Ha-ha! Ollie, you old son of a gun. No, just a little stage fright, that's all.
With Brother Jonas's help, Greg encourages Howard a little further into the bushy shadows of the quad.
Sorry, buddy. Just caught you a little awkwardly. Must have accidentally brushed against that hand.
Howard pants and burbles to himself. The man's clearly having some kind of meltdown. Could be a good thing. Maybe he'll go the whole hog. Give up teaching and spare Greg a major headache. Damn hard to actually fire somebody these days.
How you doing there? Feeling better? Tell you what, Howard. I'm sorry you can't catch it live, but in view of your contribution, I'm going to send you a complimentary DVD of the concert on the house. What do you say to that?
Howard gurgles, dispiritedly.
Attaboy. You take yourself home now and have a nice rest. Brother Jonas will see you to the gate. Enjoy your time off.
Whatever he had planned, Howard now admits defeat and stumbles off into the night, the brother following a few steps behind. Greg keeps smiling and waving till he's safely out of sight. Then he tells Gary Toulon on the door to alert him immediately, should Howard reappear. What a head case! Darn it! If there were any justice in the world, it would be Howard being sent off to Timbuktu, not Tom Roach. The upshot of this, anyhow, is that he misses all but the very end of Tiernan Marsh's overture. But it goes down a bomb. The MC for the night comes on, Titch Fitzpatrick, a kid with a great attitude and charm by the bucketload, and introduces the next act. It's Shadowfax, doing Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall. Lost in the strutting, spiky rhythms, Greg soon forgets about the unpleasant business with Howard. We don't need no education. Might surprise his pupils to learn that Greg had his own band once upon a time. Called themselves the Ugly Rumours. Used to cover this very song. Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone. And now he's acting principal of a school. Life's funny that way. Checking his programme, featuring a brief essay, A Good Bounce of the Ball, 140 Years of Seabrook Life, by Gregory L. Costigan. He sees the Quartets up next, doing the Citroën ad. He seeks out Connie Lawton with his eye, and finds him hovering anticipatorily by the edge of the stage, conductor's baton tucked under his arm. Good to have Van Doren back on message, for Connie's sake as much as anyone's. And the audience'll lap this up. Just you watch. It really is a heck of a lineup. Maybe he should charge an extra fiver for those DVDs. Titch Fitzpatrick vacates the stage, and Greg smiles expectantly. But as the quartet emerge, his smile quickly fades to a frown. What the hell's happened to Van Doren's horn? And why are the four of them covered in tin foil? Mom is cleaning the kitchen. She has been cleaning it for hours, down on her knees in her dressing gown. The bucket of stuff smells like it could get you high. I'm going out, Carl says. Mom doesn't hear him. Barry is waiting at Ed's when he gets there, walking up and down like a dog that's been tied up. A second later, the car pulls up and the door swings open. Inside, everybody's eyes are red from hash smoke. They're all laughing and slagging each other like usual. But underneath, you can feel other things swirl around like sharks. Carl sits in the boot because there's no room. He watches the Saturday night streets outside. Chippers, billboards, traffic lights. Like a huge hand slowly closing around them. Across Dino's knees, the sports bag from under the bed. In his head, a black field, hands rising out of the grass.
Where is the place?
Barry says.
Not far,
Mark says. Everybody chewing the inside of their mouths. To distract them, Dino asks if they could have any bird. Who would be their number one?
I'll go first. Angelina Jolie, hands fucking down.
Mark says,
Scarlet.
Noxer says,
Bethany.
Is she legal yet?
Dino goes.
If she's old enough to bleed,
goes Noxer. Barry says,
Beyonce.
But she's black,
Stee says, and everyone laughs.
What about you, Head?
Dino says. Carl wants to say Laurie, just to say her name. But he doesn't want to say it in this car. It's like she's sand now, magic sand. He has only a little left, and if he takes it out here, it will be blown away.
Well?
Laurie, 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 goes his brain. He feels like crying.
Beyonce as well,
he says. Noxer grunts.
Fuck's sake.
Stephen,
Dino says to Stee. Stee is quiet for a long time. Then he says,
Helen of Troy.
What?
Who the fuck is Helen of Troy?
She was Greek,
Stee says.
They had a war about her.
Vietnam,
Carl says.
No, you spa. Look, 1,000 years ago, in Greece.
That's stupid,
Dino says.
Why is it stupid?
Because you don't even know what she looked like.
They had a fucking war over her. Obviously, she must have been pretty fucking hot.
Yeah, but it has to be someone alive.
Why?
Because how are you going to ride her if she's fucking dead?
For fuck's sake,
Stee is getting pissed off.
It's a game, you cunt. It doesn't matter who we fucking pick. You think Angelina fucking Jolie's gonna ride you just cause you picked her? If Angelina Jolie was right here in this fucking car, I bet you £1 million she'd ride fucking Looney Tunes here before she rode you.
Dino shuts his mouth tight and looks out the window.
I'm just saying, if you want to pick the hottest board, like, you've got your Beyoncés and your Angelinas and all them. But the little old lady shuffling off the fucking bingo night, 50 years ago she could have been sexier than all of them. She could have been the sexiest board of all time. And then, on top of that, there's all the boards that are dead. Like, in history, there must have been millions of amazing rides. But we'll never even know what they look like.
What the fuck are you on about, you gimp?
Noxer says.
I don't know. It just seems sort of unfair.
Maybe someday someone will invent a time machine and you can go back and ride all the dead boards.
Yous lads are fucking strange.
Noxer says. Then the car stops and everyone goes quiet.
We're here.
Mark says, in a poltergeist voice. They are on an ordinary-looking road, lined with ordinary-looking houses. Right in front of the car, though, in the middle of the normal houses, are these gates. They remind Carl of Laurie's gates, but they're not in Fox Rock. He doesn't know where they are. A wall, too tall to climb, runs from the gates away behind the houses. For a minute, they sit there in the car, like they're waiting for something. But Carl doesn't know what.
I can't do this without a blast,
Mark says at last, and reaches over Stee's leg for the glove compartment. Inside, there's a package wrapped in brown paper, and a film canister filled with coke. Mark takes a big snort, then gives it to Stee. Then Dino and Noxer have some. But Noxer gives it back to Stee without Carl or Barry having any. He doesn't look at them. He acts like for a minute he's forgotten they're there.
Okay,
Mark says. He gets out of the car and goes to the intercom. Carl can't hear what he says. He gets back in the car. They don't talk. Coke frazzles electric through the air. The gates swing open. Mark drives through. The gates close again behind them. He pulls the car up outside a little house that doesn't look like there's anyone in it. The others all get out. Someone opens the boot. There are no lights. The air has gone dark blue, and everyone has turned into shadows. This is fucking weird. A second ago, just on the other side of that wall, they were in the city. Now it's like they're in the country.
Come on,
Mark says with the package in his hand. And he disappears instantly into the dark like he's fallen down a hole. The ground sinks under Carl's feet. They're in a bog or something. He has to hurry not to lose the others. He can't see his own hand in front of his face, and something is there. Something is moving, thudding towards them. Dino reaches into the sports bag. Horses. They come close enough so he can see the outlines of their pointy ears. Then they stop and wait there, breath snuffing down their noses. They watch them go past, like they know something. They know who's waiting for Carl. Suddenly it's freezing cold. The others are under the trees. There is the sound of rushing water. Their faces appear as he gets closer, like ghosts in a graveyard. Do they know too? A slimy log stretches across a stream. Dino is smiling.
Ladies first,
he says. Carl goes over the log on his hands and knees.
Where is this cunt?
He hears Noxer say.
He said he'd light a fire for us,
Mark says. They're talking about the druid, Carl. They don't know about dead boy. They're not bringing you to him. Now they're in a forest. Branches keep springing back into Carl's face. But what if dead boy is inside their heads too, pushing their thoughts with his see-through hands? What if none of this is even real? Maybe Carl is in a nightmare. Maybe he smoked loads of hash and is sleeping. Wake up, Carl! Wake up! Wake up! But then, like a spark from a lighter, he sees a tiny orange flame somewhere in the dark.
Look!
He shouts. Not waiting for the others, he stumbles towards it, ignoring the branches in his face and the brambles that drag at his ankles, until the woods open into a field and the spark turns into a bonfire.